And now I will go to the second main item. But in connecting between a birth, there is also something else I would like to say with regards to the first topic, which helps us to understand the current confrontation. Just to remind you, and I hope or I wish that our current generation asks about this. From the 1980s until 2000, even till 2006, some people in Lebanon held the resistance responsible for everything which the enemy did, for all the attacks carried out by the enemy. When the Israelis attacked the villages, before it withdrew, when we saw military operations against the Israeli occupying forces, the Israelis would then arrest people. They would surround villages, destroy houses, kill people. And then when the Israelis withdrew to the borderline, they bombed without distinguishing between civilians or others. Every time we saw some Lebanese say that that's the responsibility of the resistance. Why are you, the resistance, carrying out attacks against the Israelis? Why are you carrying out martyrdom operations in Beirut against the Israelis or in Mount Lebanon or in Sidon or in Tyre or in other places? Leave the Israelis alone and they won't do anything. That's what we used to hear. And even some people, until 2000, never did they use the term martyr when they referred to the martyrs of resistance. They never spoke about a resistance and an enemy. They spoke about a circle of violence. This is what some people spoke of, a circle of violence, fighting. And they didn't label it as nationalistic or resistance or an honorable cause. Now, back then, if we had listened to what these people said, we even heard some political rhetoric. They started to speak about the policy of taking away excuses or justifications. How can we protect Lebanon? By stripping them of justifications. We take away the justifications and excuses, and Lebanon will remain under occupation. If we had listened to this, Israel would have still been today in Beirut and in Mount Lebanon, and might have continued and went to the north, Tripoli and Bardak, and it would have built settlements, and it would have appointed the governments, and it would have managed the country and imposed its own political decisions. It would have stolen our water, which we Lebanese aren't able to benefit from. They would have taken this water to occupy Palestine. And then, if any oil would have come out, we wouldn't have fought against one another regarding the oil, because everything would be owned by the Israelis. If we had listened to those people back then, those people who used to consider that what the Israeli enemy is carrying out, the attacks, the aggressions against Lebanon and against the Lebanese villages and their homes, against the men and women, is only a reaction, a national, rational reaction for the Israelis, because you, the resistance, are carrying out operations against them. Didn't we hear this before in Lebanon? We heard rhetoric, language, we heard the media speak about it, we heard this amongst politicians, we heard this also on the cultural level, at the intellectual level. However, this resistance and the people of the resistance, in addition to many of the Lebanese and a high percentage of the Lebanese people, were not impacted by this rhetoric, and they continued on the same path, and via sacrificed efforts, via the martyrs, via the imprisonment, the detainees, the prisons and displacement, once, twice, three, four, five times, they put up with all this until they brought about this liberation, which we celebrate every year and which all Lebanese enjoy, those who paid the price and those who didn't pay the price. Today, now let this stay in our minds when we resort or when we refer to the second danger, because this also exists today. Now, when we speak about the second threat, the second danger which we spoke of often over the recent stages, this which threatens the whole region, just like Israel threatens all the governments and peoples of the region today, this second threat also threatens all the peoples and the countries of the region. And I'm referring here to the danger of terrorism, the Takfiri terrorism threat. Now, Takfiris by themselves don't pose a big threat. If somebody tells me, for example, I am a kafir, I'm an infidel, okay, that's his business. I don't need his blessing to tell me if I am a kafir or an infidel or not. That's his business. Now, if it only remains within the ideological legal sphere, okay. In the world, we don't want anyone to give us their blessing. And in the end, in the aftermath, after this world, the key to heaven isn't in his hands. The keys of heaven, it's known where these keys are. The problem is not only when it comes to takfirism. The problem is that when they say someone is a takfiri, they don't accept this other person who disagrees with them ideologically or religiously or even politically. They go directly to spill the blood of this person. No other solution. Spilling their blood, also attacking their families, their money, eliminating them, cancelling them out. And this is something which is now well known. It doesn't need me to provide evidence. It's something well known. It's well known now throughout the region. Now, of course, this takfiri terrorism today exists in all regions, and it is represented by armed groups which are present in most of the countries of the region and maybe even in all countries of the region. And these groups pursue a takfiri path of elimination whereby it spills the blood of anyone against it. And here and now, it's not about Sunnis and Shia or Muslims and Christians. The Christians, it's clear, and even amongst the Muslims, Shia, Alawis, Ismailis, Zaydis, all those who are not Sunnis, it's clear. But when we also refer to the Sunnah, all the Sunnis who are against them are also within the category of being labeled as takfiris. And it's so easy for them to say, you're a takfiri, you're an infidel. So just a few weeks ago, didn't the ISIL make a declaration against al-Nusra? ISIL, together with Nusra, have the same ideology, the same path. They were the same organization, the same Amir, the same breath, the same culture, the same in all different aspects, in their clothes, in their language, in their minds, in their hearts. But when they disagreed on a political issue, they might disagree when it comes to an oil well in Syria. After this disagreement came, they were accused of being infidels, of takfiris. It's so easy. It was so easy. And then after that, we have other judgments, other declarations. This has become clear in the whole region. If they disagree with someone who is in their same ideology or shares the same ideology, if they disagree with them politically or when it comes to financial issues, they accuse him of being a takfiri. And then other repercussions take place. What has happened recently in Syria, the intense fighting between the ISIL, Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant, and al-Nusra, this is something which we must look into. We must look at it and focus on it, not to make fun of them, but we must take a look, take a close look and draw lessons. Look at the present and expect for the future. Look at what has happened just over the past few weeks. The Syrian opposition speak about more than 2,000 people being killed over these past few weeks. The number of suicide operations, numbered tens of suicide operations against one another. The booby-trapped cars were sent to villages which were full of citizens. Just because this village is with al-Nusra or the other is in the under control of the ISIL, but just because of that they send them. They slaughtered the children, they destroyed the villages. This is their fighting together, not their fighting against the government. Suicide operations against one another. The killing of those who have been detained without any mercy, mass graves, mass bloodbaths, mass massacres. What about what? What's their disagreement? You have the same ideology. You have the same sect. You have the same path you are walking on. What did you agree on? What did you disagree on? Did you disagree regarding a political issue or about the Amir or about an oil well? Weren't these the subjects of disagreement? And this is what happened. So that is what took place. Take a close look. This shows you their mindset, the mind, the way of thinking of the leaders and the individuals of these groups. And this is not new anyway, and it's no surprise. We were expecting this, not because we see things more than others, no, because anyone who monitors and followed what took place before can expect such a scenario to take place. And the ignorance is strange. Look at Afghanistan. the jihadist Afghani factions fought one of the strongest armies in the world, one of the strongest two armies, the Soviet army, and it defeated this army in Afghanistan. Then the Soviets withdrew. What happened? A group of jihadist factions, because there are some jihadist factions in Afghanistan who had this takfiri ideology, this ideology which leaves everyone out, this bloody ideology, and they have invented this quote of the Prophet. I brought with me its slaughtering, but this is not the religion of Allah. Because there were some people, however, which had this way of thinking, the jihadist Afghani factions entered into a bloody, intense battle amongst one another. They destroyed suburbs and villages, and the number of those killed on both sides, and the jihadist leaders who were also killed. The Soviet army didn't do this. The Soviet army didn't kill as many as they did. Ever since the Soviets withdrew until today, refer to one day, mention to me one day which passes without blood, without displacement, without difficulty of life, without killing. Mention to me one day whereby we had peace. And that's because of them, these groups. In Algeria, you can tell me Afghanistan has mountains, it's difficult to deal with the situation, but in Algeria, the armed groups in Algeria, what did they do to the Algerian people? And what did they do to one another as well when they killed the emirs of one another and the conflicts which took place between these groups? I don't want to mention too many examples. That's enough in order to have enough time to mention, if you can change this watch in front of me, because it's off, Sayyid Hassan telling one of his associates. This is what is taking place now, and we must draw lessons from this, and now I will enter and mention Lebanon. Now, in Lebanon, we had bombings in more than one area, and we have suicide operations which targeted people, children, women, markets, marketplaces, normal people, and crimes were committed. And some of those, before we said who and how, some said it was the Syrian government, some said it was the Syrian intelligence, some said it was Mossad, but I was clear. We didn't jump quickly to accusations with regards to these bombings, and we said, wait, it will become known. It won't become known, it won't be revealed, not because they have secrecy or not, no, because they're going to a declared war. And so they download on the videos on the internet, and they claim responsibility, and they send messages, and they also declare the goals they want to target. So it's no longer an issue up for debate, up for argument. Those who are behind these operations are takfiri fighting groups, not jihadist groups, takfiri fighting groups. If anyone who still wants to disagree, the Israelis, of course the Israelis have penetrated these groups. The Americans, of course, use these groups, and they use them in Iraq for a long time and elsewhere as well. But there is no doubt that this person, that person, the names are clear. This person is a Lebanese, this other one is a Palestinian, this one is a Syrian, this one is a Saudi, a Moroccan. It'll become clear. The names will become clear. This guy is an Iraqi, for example. They are the ones who are leading these terrorist networks, and they are the ones who are planning these suicide operations. This tells you the mindset. Now, we had a debate in Lebanon in light of these bombing suicide attacks. There was a debate amongst the Lebanese. As usual, there was division. Some people in Lebanon said that these attacks, these bombings, these suicide operations would not have taken place were it not for Hezbollah's military intervention in Syria. And from that day, they are still continuing with the same rationale, with the same justification for these operations. Today, they are using the same language, and this will continue, even if we've entered into a national unity government. This language will continue because it's part of the political rivalry and confrontation in the country. Now, let's reflect on this logic. Before we went to Syria, didn't we witness in Lebanon a war which was imposed by such groups? in the north and in some of the Palestinian refugee camps. In some areas, they attacked using car bombs, Christian areas, and the army. We have a list. The media can show you the list. This happened before the events in Syria. Now, let's put this aside. In light of such a logic, there are two assumptions only. Either that our intervention in Syria, these bombings have nothing to do with our intervention in Syria, or they have something to do with our intervention. They either are related, either our intervention in Syria is the reason, or it's not. Our intervention has nothing to do with it, and from the beginning they wanted to open a front in Lebanon. We have these two assumptions. Now, if we want to go to the first assumption, which we believe in, that these Takfiri groups, Lebanon is one of their targets, and this is something declared in their rhetoric, in their speeches. However, they came and said Lebanon is an arena for, not for jihad, but for victory. The priority is for Syria, and then we'll go to Lebanon. Did they say this or not? They did say this. You can listen to it on the internet, on television, on the media. And one of their priorities was to control the border areas with Lebanon, whether the northern border areas or the Biqa'i, the border areas near the Biqa'i. So it was only a matter of time, meaning that in principle, with regards to them, they are coming in one way or another. And we believe that if they don't come today, they'll come tomorrow. And they announced this, they declared this. This is, if we consider that it's nothing to do with our role. In principle, Lebanon is a target of the Takfiri groups. Lebanon is part of the project of the Takfiri groups. And if the Americans and Israelis have penetrated them, of course they will make Lebanon a target, because they want to rip apart the whole region. And Lebanon has a uniqueness, because in Lebanon, just like in Syria, we have a resistance which still poses the biggest threat to the Israeli plot in the region. So this means, in our point of view, they're going to come anyway. They were going to come anyway. And what invited them to come into Lebanon was their mindset, their plot, and the front was open. Let's assume we have another rationale. Let's go with you. Let's go with your version, the other side. Let's assume, according to what they say, if we assume what you say is true, that you people, you are paying the price because Hezbollah sent fighters in order to fight in Syria. So this is the reason they came, they carried out these bombing attacks and these suicide operations, they resorted to this option. Let's take, for example, this assumption which some speak of. In this assumption, now, our language, I'm going to be very clear. Okay, this requires us to ask another question. Let's assume what they say is true. Does it require such a sacrifice, putting up with all of these repercussions? Does it deserve for us to go and fight in Qusair and to go and fight in Damascus? Because these are the two main areas which we contributed to. Al-Qusair is a border area, and Damascus also is on a border area, because if Damascus falls, then all the border areas near Lebanon would be under the control of these armed groups. So does it require for us to take such measures which would lead to such a reaction? Does it deserve it or not? Now I remind you